I'd like to go ahead and introduce Scotty from Fresno.
Hi, I'm Scotty. I'm an alcoholic. And it wasn't like Dateline. I don't know if that sounded kind of bad, like the Chris Hansen or something. But I'm grateful to. I'm grateful to be here. That's weird having them introduce you like that and telling them a little bit about yourself. But how long am I supposed to speak for?
3 hours.
3 hours? We could do that. I need a Red Bull. Five till. Okay, we could do that. You get a little gist. I've been to a ton of treatment centers. I was the type that I started real young, you know. Well, first I have to say, I've never been to a meeting where you do a moment of silence that long. Like, that's like, I was thinking in my head, this is why I need to be here. My head's fucked up. You know, I start thinking about some weird shit in an AA meeting during the meditation, you know. And that's kind of like why I started drinking and using, was because my head was always a little bit more fucked up than everybody else. You know, I remember being like, 5, 6 years old, and I was like the type of kid that... Oh, can you not hear me? Okay. Yeah, that's good. Check. Alright. So I was the type of kid like 5, 6 years old, right? Like, just there's something wasn't right, you know? Like, I would pick up like sticks that were hollow or like cigarette butts, you know, and go and, you know, smoke them, right? Like, you picture a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, right? They're not running around doing that, like, at the park, you know? But that's what I was doing, right? And I would wait for, I'd wait for my parents to be driving home down the street, and I would be, like, hiding behind the bushes with, like, hollowed out sticks at, like, 6, 7 years old, and I would be like passing it to my friends, but I didn't, they were like invisible friends, you know, like I'm sitting there behind a bush by myself passing back and forth my invisible friends, you know, like, so there was obviously, I don't know what it was, but something was fucked up in my head, right? Like, so like there was probably a lot of red flags like early on, and like I came from, like, people say normal family, so I mean, there wasn't any major problems going on at the time. And so it's kind of hard to pinpoint at that age where that behavior was coming from. So, like, I was a kid that I had really bad ADD, like ADHD still, right? Like, I cannot sit still. Like, that's just how I'm wired. So my parents, right, they had to always have me in, like, every sports program, right? Like during the summer, I had to be in every camp. I had to be doing something because I could not sit down, and I couldn't sit in a classroom, right? I was like that kid in elementary school where I just remember, like, I'd be seeing a psychologist and they'd give me like those fucking cubes and like art books, right? To like, you know, like looking at you through the window to try to like, what's wrong with this guy, you know? And so that was always kind of like my identity, right? But I had to, so when I would go to school, I had to work twice, 3 times as hard as everybody else just to do the same work. And sports was the only thing that, like, I was able to get my energy out and, like, excel and feel a part of, right? So growing up, good student athlete, I guess you could say, like, I stopped, like, those cigarette behaviors. I got kicked out of 4th grade for having cigarettes on campus. But after that, like, I turned good, you know? And, like, so through, like, 5th, 6th, junior high, right, I was, like, I guess you would call a good student athlete. I had to work harder than anybody else, but my behaviors weren't the best. I always got kicked out of class, you know, like I was the kid that, I remember in junior high, like you have like teacher's assistants, like you could be a teacher's assistant, right? And they would always make me be like a teacher's assistant for the principal, you know? And I remember like your teacher's aide class, right? That's like an automatic A, right? And I got like a B and a C every time. It's like, how the fuck do you get a B or a C being a teacher's assistant, right? All you do is show up. It's like your elective class, you know? And so that was kind of like, good student athlete, that was my identity, right? When I got to high school, I went to Clovis West High School in Fresno, and we were really like competitive in sports, right? Growing up, I worked my ass off trying to, you know, compete and play football, right? We were like one of the better teams in like California. And so when I got to high school, like freshman, sophomore year, it was like I was a late bloomer at competitive schools like that. Most of the kids are held back. So everybody is already a year older than me. And then I was kind of hitting a late growth spurt, right? Getting into high school, I had always like started and like competed, right? That was like my pride. But once I stopped hitting that growth spurt, it was like I kind of started losing my identity, right? And I think everybody in... you know, every alcoholic, addict, whatever in recovery at some point in your life, it's like your identity switches, right? And that, like, right at that time, it was like this good student athlete. Okay, I'm not competing like I used to. And then that's when I started drinking and, you know, smoking weed for the first time. And I will say that I'm an alcoholic to the T. My sponsor had me write down my 10 worst consequences. My 3 DUIs, all the scars on my face, all the times I've been to jail, Mexico jail, like everything has been because of alcohol, right? But drugs are a big part of my story, and you guys asked me to share my story, so I'm going to share my fucking story. So there's drugs in there, you know? So, you know, it's not, I guess you call it outside issues. We talk about sex and all types of outside issues in here, but, you know, this is my story. So, like, right at that... at that time is when I started drinking and smoking weed, and right when I started drinking and, you know, smoking, it was like I treated it like every drug towards the end of my addiction. I treated weed at 14, 13 years old like I did heroin at the end of my addiction, right? Like I did alcohol, right? Like I would go to any length. As soon as I had that feeling inside, I wanted to go get everybody drunk and high, right? Because the way it made me feel, it was like such a relief of some type of pain I had inside. So I was like, kid was like, dude, you gotta try this, you gotta try this. And everybody I would get to try it, not everybody liked it as much as I did, right? And like, I could not fucking understand it. Like, how do you not love this? But the reality is, right, they obviously didn't feel as different inside. They didn't have as much pain, right? Whatever it was going inside me, they didn't have as much of it. So that's why they didn't like it as much as me. So within 14, I remember my dad says, like, dude, you smoke like one hit of weed, your GPA went from like a 3.6 to a 2.2. And it's like, what, one hit, you know? And so at 14, I remember I was coming home one night and I was just, I think I was just drinking and smoking, but I was doing it on a day-to-day basis. Like at 14, as soon as I started drinking, I stopped going to school. I had the most disrespect for all of authority. Like you could have the campus police officers come to my classroom, the principal, they call me in, my parents, I just say, fuck off, and there is nothing you could tell me, right? Like I stopped going to school. You're 14, you stop going to school, you usually go to like juvenile hall, right? So that's where I was like on my way to. Well, there's these things when you're 14, right? I think the probation or whatever told my parents, like, you could find him a program or he could go to like a boot camp, you know? And so I get home, it was like 2 in the morning, right? Because I didn't, they could try to ground me, give me curfew. I didn't give a fuck, you know? And so I came home and it was like, I wake up and there's these 2 big-ass Samoans in my room, right? I don't know if you know what Samoans are, right? Samoans are fucking big, right? They're like 300 pounds, right? And so there's these programs in Utah. A lot of them are shut down now. But they... so basically what they do is they kidnap you, right? They fucking hogtie you, kidnap you, right? And I was small as shit. And they kidnap me, throw me in the back of a van, right? There's no, like kind of like a cop car, right? And they drive me 14 hours to Utah. I'm like, oh yeah, you're going to wilderness camp. I'm like, oh fuck, is this going to be Utah? All types of like cabins, chicks, you know? I'm like, this is going to be all right, you know? And I get there and, they give me like a bag of beans, like a tarp, some hiking boots, khakis, and like a white shirt, right? And then they blindfold me and drive me like 5 hours in the middle of the wilderness. And they go, so you don't know where you're going. They take your socks, so if you try to run, the hounds, they send hounds after you because you're in the middle of the desert, right? And so they said it on the way up, right? They're like, if you peak, you get 2 extra weeks, right? But I was I went to Clovis West High School. I don't know if you know where that was. So, like, I was, like, shell-shocked, you know. I didn't want to do this, you know. So you get to this program, and there's all the, you don't, the girls don't get to take a shower. They're all their legs are hairy, right? Everybody's dirty, right? The whole program, it's like freaking hardcore wilderness camp, right? You wake and you make fire with sticks. You fucking hike, right? It was like a traumatic experience for me, right? And it's a 28-day program, right? And so you're in the middle of wilderness. I took 28 days as early as you could graduate. Took me 59 days because I peaked a couple times because I was like, I did not want to be there. I tried to escape, right? Like I was, like that's just how it went down for me, right? And I mean, I should share these stories like that because it's important, right? You start working like a four-step, right? And you start looking back on your life. Like for me, the most important to learn about myself was kind of like what was going on early on, because once I was, you know, drinking every day and doing drugs, it was like, I mean, it was already there, you know. So for me to like solve a lot of my inside problems, it was really dissecting like in the steps, like what was going on early on. So when I came back from that program is like really when like resentments, right, started building up, abandonment, right? And if it was like my identity had changed before, it had really, you know, changed. Because now there's this kid, right? Now I'm like the party kid, right? And went to rehab at 14, you know? So that was like my new identity, you know? And I pretty much liked that identity, like, for a long time, right? That's like it helped me fit in, right? And so wilderness camp didn't do too much. I remember I came back, I think I was like, so when I came back, the schoolwork was really easy there, so like it helped me progress. It was like the words were like this big, you know? So like I got through like some good classes, and I came back, I went back to Clovis West, and it had been like 4 months, right? And I started doing other things, right? I was like a chameleon, right? Like I would be drinking with my friends on the weekend, right? Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right? Doing cocaine, and then I go to school, and then like my gangbang homies that were like in the bathroom smoking meth, right? I'd hop in there real quick, and then I'd have my skateboard friends, right? It was like I was always a chameleon, you know? Like I wasn't okay with being me, right? So I had to be a bunch of different people. So it was like 4 months after I got back from wilderness camp, and then I got home and there's two more big ass Samoans in my room, right? And it was like one of them was like an ex-cop. This time I tried to escape. I still got scars all over my on my side right here because I tried to run, but I was like fucking going like I was moving slow, right? Because I was like under the influence. I thought I was going fast. You know? You had a big ass Samoan catch you, you know, like you weren't moving fast. I was small and quick and played receiver, you know, but I had some stuff in my body, you know. And so this one, I was a run risk, as they call you. So they take your shoes and they drive me to, this was a different type of more behavior modification, right? Because people didn't want to just, like, my parents say, like, he's just an alcoholic, right? You know, he's got a behavioral issue, right? But the reality was that I probably had both, you know? And so I get to this program, there's all these kids. These are all the freaking worst kids across the country, right? I swear to God, like, that's where I learned how to fight. Like, the kids there are freaking gnarly, right? And so I get there, I'm like, damn, you guys all got kidnapped? And they're like, oh, no, my parents brought us here on the plane. I'm like, fuck, I'm the only one that got kidnapped, right? So, I mean, that just like was like that, that's like was always me, right? I was always that kid, right? That always just like, you're in the program with all the worst kids in the country, you're the only one they had to come and kidnap, you know? And so that was my experience. I remember there, like, I'll fast forward this to this. But I got there, there's, you know, like those sprinkler, fire sprinklers that are in the buildings, right? And you can't get kicked out of these places, right? These are the worst, like, they're made for bad kids, you know? And I got there and I was acting out, and they make you sit in these boarded up rooms, and you have to sit Indian style back against the wall, and you can't move, right? And like one of the staff left like a second, right? And I started ripping the boards down, and I broke all those sprinklers, whatever, the fire sprinklers, right? And water just started shooting, and I flooded the whole facility, like $70,000 worth of damage, right? And, like, I was able to get kicked out in, like, 3 to 4 months, you know? So, and it's like a year-long program, right? But these places, if you're acting out, they slam you. They can put their hands on you. So if you cuss at a staff, they call it slamming. By big Samoan ladies, too. Oh, my slam mask. But, so then when I got back, right, I went to, like, continuation school, Gateway, right? I was at, you know, the campus police officers. They only let me come to, when I graduated high school, they only let me come to school 2 classes, right, because they didn't want me on campus. You know, and then I finally graduated. I cheated my way. I think my mom and sister helped me do my homework. And then so I got to graduate, and they have, when you have your graduation when you're 18, they have it at, like, a big football stadium, right? And it's like, you know, that's all your parents' friends, your family, right? Everybody that you go to grow up knowing, right, that are at these graduations. And I remember my senior graduation, everybody walks with a girl, right? Every guy and girl, and they walk across, right? Well, I had to walk across, like, 20 yards behind my whole class with the principal and the campus police officer, right? And it's like, there he is again, like, that's that kid, right? And slowly but surely, right, like, that identity started changing more and more, and it starts taking you, like, a toll on you, right? Because, like, no human, like, wants to, like, to feel that inside, right? And so, like, when I started turn 18, I had a lot of, that's when I started, it was right after, like, the OxyContin era. But, like, at that time, I was, I drank every day, right? I drank to the point where I got the DTs and shakes, right? I got my first DUI at 18. I got in trouble selling ecstasy at 18, and that was like when they were trying to do like the manslaughter thing or something like that. It was that Andre Nicotina concert. I'm sure there's some people in here that know that. So, but that's like when the brutal consequences started, you know, happening, right? And I could tell you the story some other time of like how I tried to get out of my DUIs, right? Like I would try to act like there was mentally something wrong with me, and like I would try to get sympathy from the police officers, like if they think this kid is just not mentally well, then maybe we'll give him a break, right? So I don't know if you want a picture what that scene looks like when you get pulled over and you have somebody that's acting like something's like mentally wrong with them, right? To say that I'm not drunk, right? I'm just, you know, disabled, you know? And so like, but that's like, that was my thinking, right? That's my best thinking, right? And so right about this time is when my disease just started progressing. I started going to rehab, right? After rehab, after rehab, you know, it got to the point where I had, you know, I would drink Patron Corona and shoot meth and heroin in my neck, right? And take Xanax, right? That was my go-to, right? Like, that was, like, my disease progressed to a point where that's what it took, right? I would go to a rehab, and then I'd go on a run for, you know, 3 weeks, and then I'd go to another one, and I'd call my mom, and I'm like, yeah, I'm back at rehab, and the rehab counselors would be like, you know, so when was the last time you've been in treatment? I'd be like, it's been like 8 months. And then I call my mom, and she's like, no, you were in rehab like 3 weeks ago, you know? But to me, the run started getting shorter and shorter, right? It fucking felt like 6 months. I was getting to a point in my life where I was freaking tired, right? I had been to jail in Fresno 10 times, Orange County Jail, Huntington Beach Jail, Laguna Beach Jail. I got lost in Mexico for 3 days. I left rehab and went to jail in Mexico. I got beat up so bad and overdosed, and my mom was coming down to Orange County for family group, right? Well, I went to Mexico, right? And I got stuck there for 3 days in Tijuana. I couldn't get back across the border because they beat me up so bad. I looked homeless. Nobody would let me use their phone, nothing, right? So, and my mom's sitting at rehab for me for family group. Where's Scotty, right? Like, so that was like the damage I started having on my family, you know? And like, my mom had been hospitalized from stress, you know? Like, I put my family through so much, right? Like, all those stories I tell, but from 18, I didn't get sober until I was 26, right? Those are just stories up until I was 18. 18 to 26 is just like, you guys lived it, you know? I don't need to really get into all of those stories, right? Like, you know what the life that you're living, to go to 12 rehabs and jail and stuff that many times, right? When you're doing drinking and doing drugs every day, right? So I usually don't even get into that story because you know it and you've lived it. So it finally got to the point where I wanted to get sober. I was just tired, right? Like I knew, I used to go to those meetings so young. I would come to AA at 14, and at the end of my addiction, towards like the last year, I'd be like, I'd rather fight my disease to the death than go to AA. I had the biggest resentment at AA. It was the last thing but I knew everybody was fucking right for like the last 3 years of my drinking and using, right? I just kept on telling myself in my head, like, damn, those motherfuckers are right. I'm going to have to go to AA. I know I'm going to have to do it, because I got to a point where I didn't want to die, right? And, you know, the worst feeling in the world is not wanting to die, but you can't stop. And you know you got a good chance of dying every day, right? I got to a point where it was like I knew it was time where I was going to die, and I still couldn't stop. I got to the point where I got sober at CAP detox in Fresno, dirtiest detox I've ever been in, dirtier than jail, right? This shit's nasty, right? And my ass ended up I was in detox 5 weeks, you know, and I was on that. I found God on the detox floor at CAP, right? Crying like a little baby, right? I didn't care about freaking, you know, shower slippers or nothing. I laid my ass on that freaking dirty freaking floor and put a towel there and detoxed and cried and prayed, right? And I prayed so long and so hard, you know, it was like I knew it was the only option, right? Something had to be different. I didn't know who God was, right? But I was praying for something like the withdrawal gods or something, like freaking take this shit away from me, right? And so everyone would tell me, this too shall pass, and I was like, dude, this shit is not passing, right? But I kept on praying and praying, right? And it was like, after a couple weeks, it was like, finally, it was like, I was saying this prayer, and I had tears going down my face, and it was like, for the first time, it was like, I had like 1,000 pounds just lifted off my shoulder, because that was the first time where I told some of the staff there and the counselors, right, and I was like, you guys tell me what to do, I don't give a fuck what it is, right, I'll do it, right, I don't care if you tell me to do a year-long program, I don't care what you guys tell me to do, I'll do it. And that was like the first time, it was like the best feeling in the world, because at that moment I knew that I didn't have to make any decisions anymore. And that's what I did. I almost hated every single thing that everybody's told me, especially in early sobriety, right? Like it was a 60-day program. They said, hey, we're going to scholarship you another 60 days, right? And I'm like, fuck, you know, but I told them, right, I'll do whatever it takes, right? I was willing to go to any lengths, right? When I was in that program, right, that's when I got my sponsor. I remember my sponsor, he's old as fuck, and he came to CAP, and he was, like, being of service, and he was walking around all happy and, like, joyous, and I figured, like, right, he's so old, I could get him, right, he's not going to tell anybody any of my shit, right, and so that was, like, my thinking, right, and so I could see that he had this, like, peace and happiness, and all those programs, all those shrinks I've always seen, psych wards, right, I would always sit in the therapist, right, and sit in the psychiatric hospital, and they would ask me all these questions, but inside I knew I was holding shit in and lying, right? I go to my mom, hey, therapy, this shit doesn't work, right? I've been going for a year, right? But you can't sit in therapy and be lying the whole time, right? That's the defeats the purpose, right? So I always knew that, like, you know, and I knew the steps, right? I always knew what the fourth step was. And for me, I always knew there was shit inside that I hadn't told anybody that was killing me, you know? That it had to be, like, a big part of the reason I couldn't stop. And so when I found my sponsor, it was like, I call it the sensory spot, right? You could do your fourth step, you could do an inventory of someone, but there was always this like 3% chance, 3% that I wouldn't share, right? And that 3% is what kills us and causes us to relapse, right? So my sponsor came up to me, "Will you be my sponsor?" And the first time I met with him, I just started telling him everything. He's like, no, you gotta, we're gonna do step one first. I said, shut the fuck up, I'm telling you all this, right? And I didn't care, right? But it was that important with me that I just told him everything, right? We ended up going back and like doing it the right way, but it was like, I was spiritually like bankrupt, sick, and there was things I couldn't hold on into anymore, right? And that was like the big deal difference maker for me, right? So, when I was at this program, they started having me go and, they had me go and like, the counselors sucked, right? So I was like, dude, I grew up in rehab, right? And I didn't just go and get kicked out of all my rehabs. I usually completed them, never had 30 days sober before. Like, they used to call me that, lived in LA, they call me the AA Antichrist, you know? Because like, I always had stuff when you're not supposed to, like in rehab, right? And it was always like drinking on the weekends, like, but I would convince you I was sober. And so I had learned so much in treatment, right? I just didn't, I knew it, I just wouldn't apply it. And so when I was in there, I started going to the detox house, like at 3 months, 4 months, and teaching like groups. Like, I'm like, dude, you guys' curriculum sucks. Like, here, do, and you know, and I started, you know, doing groups. And then I started an AA meeting out there because there was no panel, right? So I started like being of service, right? And for the first time, all that pain and suffering I had always felt, right? All those treatments I had been to, all the pain I had put my parents through, my family through, everybody I had hurt. As soon as I started doing some of those groups and I started seeing some of these guys, like, hey, dude, I didn't leave. I stayed because you talked to me, right? I believe it was God working through me, but I mean, at the same time, that was the first time I had ever had purpose, right? The first time I ever, all that pain and suffering that I went through was like all of a sudden, at a blink of an eye, it wasn't just for no reason, right? I had the opportunity to use my experience to like save somebody's life, right? Like, people go to school to be doctors for 20 years, right? To be able to do a surgery and save someone's life, right? All I did was a bunch of drugs and drink for a lot of years. I had 90 days, right? And I'm telling a kid in detox, like literally helping another alcoholic save their life, right? The same thing that everybody in this room has the opportunity to do that will end up saving your life. And so from that moment, it was like I was like addicted to service, right? I would drive people around to meetings, right? I worked the, and I would do whatever I could to help people get into rehab, right? It was like I had like 8 people like living on my couch, right? And it was like going into my relationship like life, right? And then I started getting a little bit more time sober. I had never had I worked minimum wage job, right? I had a humble little life for like 2 years, right? And so, I remember when I was at CAP, right? There used to be these nursing students, right? That used to come in there and like sit in the groups. And I would always tell my counselor, I'm like, dude, I can't take care of myself for shit. You guys are helping me, but I need to marry a nurse one day, right? And so like, I would like they would teach me like how to pray and meditate like on your future. And so after a certain amount, I had like 2 years, I was working minimum wage and I would miss work to go drive people to get into like rehab, right? So I'm like missing work for service, right? Then I got in a relationship, right? And I have like 8 people living on my couch, right? And I was like, fuck, I better do something else. I better figure out a way to like make a career out of this, right? And so that's when I went to my family, right? And they helped me come up with something to do, like one, like a detox house, right? And like at that point is when I really started like getting this like purpose and passion, right? AA is 100% my purpose, right? Getting into the treatment industry is my passion. There's nothing that compares like taking someone through the steps than like having, it's two different things. That's what keeps me sober, right? But there was a lack of resource, right? So when I talk about like the program, it's AA is what saved my life. I went to a free program, right? And AA is what I do, you know? But I had the passion. It gave me the roots, right? It taught me how to discipline myself, take it one day at a time. I went to a meeting every day. I still go to not as many, but probably at least 3 a week, right? But I busted my ass in this program for a long time, for 2.5, 3 years, right? All I did was lived and breathed AA to build myself the strongest foundation as possible, because I used to pray with all my heart. I was like, God, use me to be one of your strongest soldiers. And that was before I even did the treatment thing, right? But I was praying because I wanted to build a life where I could, like, handle a lot, right? In 5 years, I've had a lot of success, you know? But it was like, I worked my butt off and I prayed for it, right? I put in the work, right? I did my steps and do my steps, right? If you get a sponsor and they won't meet with you, like, if he had dope and you're doing dope, you'd go get him to meet with you, right? Or get alcohol, right? You ask the bartender for a drink, right? Like, grab his ass and tell him, like, help me, you know? And that's, like, the kind of mindset that I had, because I knew that I wanted to get better, and I started getting confidence and helping people, and I wanted to do something with my life. I ended up marrying a nurse, you know, and it was like, she's got 9 years, she takes care of me, just like they said would happen. And then we have 2 beautiful daughters. I opened the detox center. It's been like a year and a half ago, and then we grew. We have like 90 clients, one of the biggest outpatients in like Northern California. I have contracts. I get the police officers, Fresno police officers, come to my rehab. I'm like, you got deep cleaning, motherfucker. You know, so like, but like the my life completely, you know, changed, right? Like my dad like works in the office with me. You know, like my dad didn't tell me he loved me for 10 years, you know, and the life I have today, I mean, there's not one bit of it that didn't come from Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I never had a job till I was 26. Every single thing that I know in my life, I learned in AA and from the men in AA, and getting to a point where I told them, you guys tell me what to do and I'll do it. And most of the time, like, in the program, you're going to get told a lot of things that you don't want to do, right? My sponsor said when I was in detox or an inpatient, he goes, Scotty, okay, write down your plan. And I wrote it down. He goes, okay, rip it up. Your plan sucks, you know? Because my plan did suck, right? It was like the same head that was going to make the plan to save his own life, right, was the same head that thought it was a good idea to be doing what I was doing 2 weeks before, you know? And so what AA did for me was give people to put in my life that could give me 12 steps that could, like, tell me exactly what the fuck to do, right? And if you do what they tell you and you work hard, you're going to succeed, right? Like, I had been to 12 programs, everybody my whole life, oh, you have a lot of potential. You have a lot of, you know, you always hear that. You have a lot of potential. Oh, now at 12 rehabs, okay, the statistics of you getting sober is probably slim, right? Like, you know, AA doesn't, like, work in the statistics of your past, right? It lays it there for you that if you put in the work, right, and do what is suggested, but actually do it, right, and do it with an open mind and open heart. And if you're not willing, pray for willingness, right? If you're tired of the past, right, there's hope, right? Like, I would sometimes look at, like, people that have years of sobriety, and I would have to tell myself, like, if that dumb fuck did it, then I could do it, right? Like, he's an idiot, you know? Like, it's not impossible, right? But you pray for willingness, and you put in the work. All I could say is that being where I'm at today is that I have to remain humble, right? I always tell myself, Scotty, you're freaking sick. You know, like, I have little, like, cliches that I've gotten through from the program that I have to tell myself to keep me humble. So I know that the person with 30 days, the only difference between the person with me and the person in 30 days is I hit my bottom 5 years ago. I'm not any better. There's no difference, right? The person in 30 days could have 100% even more or better than what I have today. And I mean, that's pretty much it. I appreciate, you know, being here. I would just say that you got to keep it simple and like bust your ass for your recovery. And if you feel like down and out, I mean, a lot of my when I got sober, everything seemed like so far off, right? Like getting out of a inpatient program, it seems so far off. Like that shit's never gonna happen, right? Like all, and that's why I would always get like so much anxiety and stress, and I would be doing it by myself, and I wouldn't be talking to anybody, and then I'd go right back. But your goals, your dreams, your visions are not that far off if you work the program, right? And the main thing I wanted when I got sober is I wanted peace and happiness inside. When I was in detox, I literally felt like I had a hole in my heart this big, and I was like, whew, I could feel just the wind blowing through, right? And slowly but surely, that started like filling up, right? And the more that farther you go, you start having a whole heart, right? And at 5 years, you go to this meeting in L.A., Orange County, and when someone gets a five-year chip, they go, and it's because they say that's when you're finally popping your head out of your ass. You know? I'm like turtle dove, and I'm almost there. You know? I feel it, right? But thanks for having me. If you guys want to get my number, anybody, I give my number to everyone, and anything I could do to be a service, and I'll be there, right? So if you got 30 days, help someone with 2 days. You got 90 days, help someone get with 60 days, right? And so my message of advice for you guys is be of service, and it'll save your life. Thank you.